So welcome to this panel, which is about digital archives of queer visual moving images. We will have three presentations, and we organized such a way that after every presentation will be some time, some minutes to ask the speaker. So the speaker will remain here for some minutes. We have a discussion if we please. If there are counter arguments, also we have discuss, and then follow the other participant, and at last all three of them will come to the podium and you will have the opportunity for last questions or a discussion. My name is Judit Szabó. I came from Hungary and I am the chair. I think you have noticed already. Beg your pardon, not to introduce first. The first speaker will be Anna Linder from Sweden, just directly from the island of Faroe. All the presentations reflect young enough projects. Anna's project is 2 years old. It was launched in 2017. The name is the Swedish Archive of Queer Moving Images. It has an abbreviation, SAQMI. And deals only with video and has an ambitious goal to collect all the queer videos from Sweden and supply a platform for seeing it, discuss them, and so on. So Anna, I take you the floor, and please introduce yourself shortly.
Thank you very much, Judit, and the ALMS conference for accepting me, or the archive, I should say. I'm happy to see you here, and we move on to move on to. So, SACMI, the Swedish Archive for Queer Moving Images, as you heard Judith explained a little. We organize ourselves and do not intend to be temporary that passes unnoticed, as if we were just a fly on the wall. Now we write history, our own history. The Swedish Archive for Queer Moving Images, SACMI, some refer to SAPMI, so we choose the kind of activist name, began as an artistic research project called Queer Moving Images 2013-17 at Valand Akademi. The idea to start the archive came from my own longing for a place where I could find Swedish queer moving images. I wrote the first application in 16, and today SACMI is supported by Kulturbryggan since November 17. Kulturbryggan is an alternative contributor in Sweden for projects based on innovation and development in the culture field. The final report has to be done 2020, and the goal is to be indispensable so everyone will need us. And this book is from the first project, the research project, that they started out with. So I will have some copies if you are interested afterwards. At the same time, in the same city in Sweden, a sister organization started. The archives and library of the queer movement, QRAB, collects, organizes, preserves, and makes accessible documentation and information related to queer movements and people. And we are based in the same city. We start at the same time, and we collaborate, and we try to be as transparent as possible and help each other. So the manifesto for SACMI. For the first time ever in Sweden, the Swedish Archive for Queer Moving Images are compiling the history of queer moving images and storing it all in one place. A history that has been marginalized through oppression and self-censorship. Through methods such as documentation, interviews, archiving, screenings, presentations, workshops, and discussions. The first platform of queer moving images in Sweden will be created. So, SACMI is that platform, an archive for queer moving images in Sweden, throughout history until the present day. SACMI is an indisputable venue for talks, discussions, meetings, and screenings. SACMI is the link between those who create the queer moving images and those that search for them. SACMI, with the aid of queer archivists, historians, librarians, technicians, and designers, creates a portal for queer moving images in Sweden. SACMI makes a hidden queer history of moving images available and visible, spreading it far and wide. SACMI works towards bolstering more people in daring to create moving images they wish to see and find support for their vision. SACMI wishes to inspire young people to work with moving images, and SACMI ensures that queer moving images is written into the history. So, rather than a classic archive, SACMI understands itself as a platform and a network for queer people with an interest in moving images. SACMI works for a wider and deeper understanding for what the field can be, and also as an inspirer for the upcoming generations. SACMI sees the absences and gaps in between and around active artists that still don't know the history of Swedish queer moving images, because there is no such place or way to see or find these images easily. SACMI works with a project group that consists of archivists and technicians and a reference group that consists of artists. SACMI started with a close relation to the queer people working in the field of moving images, and SACMI see their wishes as the main reason for building a space for safe talks, sharing of creative processes, and slowly building the space we want in the future. SACMI hope to be a collaborator in many different ways, but not for the sake of the white heterosexual's bad conscience. SACMI works for the queers, queers' rights to tell their own stories in their own ways. Calling SACMI an archive is a strategy to make it easier for people to understand what we are about, but in our work, rethinking what an archive can or could be is very important. So we have a quote from Anslutkovic that we use as an inspiration. Queers have long been collectors because they are not the subject of official histories and thus have to make it themselves, collecting materials that others might see as marginal. So, and a queer archive is not just a container for queer material. The structure and methods need to be queer as well. For us, this means to be independent from non-queer institutions. Institutions can support with resources, they cannot affect or gain access to the holdings. SACMI can collaborate, but only on our terms, not by mainstream appropriation of our knowledge. No commercial collaborations, we use queer language, ideological framework regarding methods and appraisal. Limiting the effect of the archivist's bias in describing the selected material by using the artist's own descriptions as much as possible. We use consent methods, and SACMI is not a passive archive and has no obligation to reproduce stereotypes. Rather, the catalogue needs to be adapted to a queer content. That is and will continue to be an ongoing learning process for all of us. So, a little bit about what we have have been doing the last years or 2 years. Some examples from different events and collaborations. SACMI thinks collaboration and visibility is the most crucial thing we can do in this early stage of survival. So this is a picture from Frigga. SACMI moved into this small house in January 19. And in May 10, we had a queer fest, SACMI together with Textival, and Aileen Miles after party. This was a housewarming party for SACMI in the new small cozy office in Gatenhjelmska Culture Reserve in central Gothenburg. As some of the guests said at the party, can we really be here? How could we get this space in the middle of the city and not out in the suburbs or underground in a hidden place? The evening was so much of a good and relaxed feeling and a span of different generations from 19 to at least 80. And this was a collaboration with the Textival Festival in Gothenburg. Here is a quite maybe bad picture, but a really good performance. So this was one of the musicians for the night, Kristina Kjellson. She was singing the lesbian history of her life and about Gothenburg. And it was really amazing to be there in that space. So this is inside the house. Later on in May, we had an exhibition called Wanted, a small peep show in Gothenburg. It's the first part of a long-term collaboration with this artist-driven gallery, 54. It will be screenings and exhibitions during 19 and 20. So Wanted is a project ongoing project for reaching out to find queer moving images that SACMI work on together with the graphic designer Marianne Fanny. So at the same night, the peep show is still ongoing until the end of August. And at the same night, 24 of May, we had also an opening in another gallery in Gothenburg. It's an exhibition called Labor. An exhibition and film screening about sex work at Gallery Monitor. Collaboration with Tove Pils, artist and curator for the show. It was both installation screenings and talks about queer sex work. And here is just some pics from the exhibition and the talks. And later on in June, it was West Pride in Gothenburg. And the International Science Festival invited SACMI to do something, and SACMI chose to invite Arne Nilsson and Lasse Longström. Lasse, you see in the jeans jacket, and Arne beside on the right. And they made a city walk about the club scene in Gothenburg, both past and present. And we hope that we can do that many times more because it was really, really interesting. And this was a collaboration that will also have a longer part, what do you say, together with the Science Festival next year. So, we walked around in the city. Here are some pictures. And you see Olav Kriström on the right from Curab had the presentation yesterday. And here's also a picture. And here is also a thing we did in West Pride Gothenburg. And this time it was the theme Stonewall and Activism. And this time the invitation came from the Museum of World Culture. And here SACMI chose to invite the new project, film project called Favorit Extremisterna by Hanna Högstedt, Maimona Abdullahi and Fatima Dobakil. And this Fatima Dobakil on the picture. This was a conversation based on the aftermaths around the film Burka Songs, about who is called extremist today, about alliances and solidarity. So, and then we move a little bit backwards. In November, the Museum of Modern Art, the Film Club, invited SACMI to curate a program, and we called it It's a Fucking Man's World. Here, the text was censored for being too excluding against, I guess, the white heterosexual man. SACMI didn't take it away or change the text. We chose to only have it on our webpage, and we handed it out to the audience as a printed program. This program was curated in the most affected period of Me Too movement in Sweden. So excerpt from the text is the one you read here. So why don't we put this applauded white man to the side for a moment and imagine other possible male identities? That way the world will become nicer and much more enjoyable for at least a little hour. In an era where digitalization and rewriting film history, SACMI wants to take part in filling in the forgotten stories, the bent images and the other perspectives. SACMI wishes to take the opportunity to enhance the visibility of queer work in many different contexts and build venues for queer moving images in Sweden. With the program It's a Fucking Man's World at the Museum of Modern Art Film Club, SACMI invites you to a screening that focuses on manliness. This program toured to Umeå and also to Gothenburg, two different film festivals, but it was never more censored. And I think it also totally depends on the people working at these other two spaces, because they were queer people. And it's a big difference, of course. So here is a picture from one of the programs we did in the beginning. We called it Let's Fly and Let's Fly Again. SACMI's first curated programs that screened in Umeå at the during the European Film Festival, Arts Friday at Umeå Bild Museum, and later on at Akademivalen during Gothenburg Film Festival. A program about flying together and the future for queer moving images in Sweden. And if you're interested in the separate programs, because I don't do the name dropping in each program, you can find it on the page. SACMI.se, and there you can read texts and names. So just a short what we are doing more. Right now in Stockholm, the archivist Julia Spada works with SACMI database to query it from the standard and write about the process. Technician Timo Menke and a technician at Valand called Per, they work in a lot of stuff with us, and we with the collaboration with Valand that continue. And SACMI just bought a small server so we can store all our own project meanwhile. For example, we helped De La Grace Volcano to digitize all films, and we're planning a retrospective with Dell later on. So in autumn 19, we're also working on a new web page, and the rest of our year we have to do a lot of application for the future. It's just this year we have money now. So upcoming events and collaboration, I heard Judith say I come from Faroe, but it's not me who go there, it's Dagmar Brunov. So Dagmar will present queer film history, and I curated the program for Faroe, Faroe Pride, I think, and it's in July now. And then also in August, we have Reclaim Pride as a other part of more against West Pride, but anyway, it's an alternative pride in Gothenburg. And in September we do the Cinema Queer Festival in Stockholm and the Cinematheque with the program that we celebrate Barbara Hammer. And later on also it's the gender conference that Pia Laskar, maybe you heard about already, that held the presentation yesterday, will organize in October panels about archives. So, and I don't know if you have any question right now. You did say we had a small minute for that. So, I think my time is over. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing us your experiences and plans. And we have to reorganize the techniques now, so down here.
So does it work?
Yeah. And please, have anybody a question or remarks? I would like to ask the relationship with this grant, Kulturbrigand. Are you fully independent, or this is a big Kulturbrigand, a big organization, and you are smaller? How do you plan the future after this grant?
Kulturbrigand is quite a new place to ask for money in Sweden, and it's all about innovation. And you have to apply as a private person, like an artist. So it's all in my own company, so we don't have any, they don't, you know, have any decisions on top of us. So it's more that we do the things we applied for. So I can also change it a little. It's not hard in that way, I think, but we don't, they don't go in our project and decide things or anything. And the next step is to take that further. So it's the planning this year. We have a huge list of dates for applications that we will follow up now.
Thank you. Other questions? Will you preserve them for the... Yes.
Yeah, the feedback from the community was only positive, but kind of surprising that we got money, I think. So the whole project started with 19 deeper interviews with the people in the field of moving images, and everyone kind of said, but how can you start up? It's no films here. It's so little. And I think we are more than 200 titles or something. So I think it's only positive. The big thing they want to do is meet each other and learn about the history of queer Swedish films, because they don't know it. And they don't know each other. Only the most famous one, maybe. So.
Thank you. Other interesting persons? No? Thanks, Anna. Enjoy the other presentations. And I introduce you Yaya Shri, who leads an archive in India and makes herself videos. You can find her the person's videos on the Vimeo. I beg your pardon, Hungarian language is gender, neutral, so it's hard to me to use the English gender neutral language. And the archive's denomination is the Queer Archive for Memory, Reflection, and Activism. It is in Bangalore, India. It has also abbreviation QAMRA. What else? And it's not only an archive, but a tool for social activism and advocacy. So I
thank you, Judith.
Give you the speech. Yeah.
No, our names are complicated. My name is Jayashree. I had not put it up. I had put it up in another version, which is not working. So anyway, so my name is T. Jayashree, and I'm a documentary filmmaker by profession. I'm an independent documentary filmmaker, and I have been making films for the last 25 years, and my work is largely on gender, sexuality, and intersection of law and public health. That's my interest. But since 2000, I just happened to be around my friends who are gay, and I tracked the sexuality movement on video without any thought of archiving or anything. And in early 2000s, I made a film called Many People, Many Desires, which was the first film to look at sexuality and class, in terms of class in India. And so over the years, we've had this long legal battle, and I'll talk about it a little bit, but I don't want to go into it. So what has happened is I've was stuck with all this video footage. And people had seen me around with my camera. They trusted me. They've talked about a lot of personal, intimate things. It's a big burden on me. What do I do with this video footage? And also this idea of archiving started to happen around 2012-13, when we had this very ghastly judgment. So people started archiving, and everything was about digital, putting it on the internet. But somehow I felt very uncomfortable with my video material to put it up online, because it also takes a lot of money and maintenance and privacy. So finally, 2 years ago, on the eve of the 10th year of the first Pride in India, I decided to do this, Kamra. And Kamra also means a room or closet. Kamra with a K in Urdu is a room and Hindi. So we kind of played on that idea. But the idea was also that the sexuality movement in India now is very polarized. There's a lot of identity politics. So how do we revive that conversation around solidarity? Because a lot of it has not changed, so we decided to set up this archive. It's not yet public. It's run out of my studio space. We are cataloging. We have amassed a huge amount of other material from other people. So it's actually a multimedia archive. So I will just show you stuff and then take you through this thing very quickly. And if you don't get some names or anything, we can talk about it later. So I want to start with this very heavy quote, which was, democracy in India is nothing more than a top dressing on a soil that is essentially undemocratic. And it defines us even today. And this was quoted by the father of our constitution, Dr. Ambedkar. And this was again quoted in the judgment that repealed, decriminalized homosexuality in 2009, which was a very landmark judgment. And the judges said, we have to cultivate a constitutional morality if we want to give equality to people. And now, right now, we have a right-wing government, and we have gone back to this. So this is the context in which we are operating today. So when we say LGBT, it doesn't really encompass. We have so many identities, and these are just few identities. So you have them in local languages. Kinnar is something from the eastern part of India. Tirunangai, Tirunambi is from Tamil Nadu, from south. Then you have Kotis, Pantis, Ijras. And now we also have people who say we are asexual. We don't put us in any box of sexuality. So this is the many, many acronyms we have. And so when we start talking about LGBT, 20 years ago, people would come on television in India and say, we send our children abroad, and they become gay, and they come back. So we were trying to counter that. And so it all started with a group called Sangama that was set up in Bangalore, which was basically a working class LGBT group. And when you say working class LGBT, it's mostly trans people. And there is this whole notion of hijras, which is a very romanticized group or identity. And they are actually the face of the gay movement in India. They were also the first people to come on street. And there was a protest in which a trans woman was murdered by her partner, and the police were treating it as a murder. And we were saying it is domestic violence. It has reminiscence of how women were murdered for dowries in the 70s and 80s in India. So they went on street, and this was the first time I ever was able to film them.
ವಿಪಿತಾ ಕುಟುಂಬ ಅವ್ರಿಗೆ ಸಪೋರ್ಟ್ ಮಾಡಕ್ ಹೋಗ್ತಾ ಇದೀವಿ. ಅವ್ರದ್ದು ಒಂದು ದೊಡ್ಡ ರಾಳಿ ಆಗ್ತಾ ಇದೆ, ಯಾಕಂದ್ರೆ ಅವ್ರಿಗೆ ವುಮೆನ್ ರೈಟ್ ಸಿಗ್ತಾ ಇಲ್ಲ ಇನ್ನ. ಅದರಲ್ಲಿ ಗೇ, ಲೆಸ್ಬಿಯನ್, ಇಜ್ರಾಗಲು, ಎಲ್ಲ ಕೋತಿ ಎಲ್ಲರೂ ಅದರಲ್ಲಿ ಮೆಂಬರ್ಸ್ ಆಗಿ ಇದ್ದಾರೆ. ಮತ್ತೆ ಇವಾಗ ರೀಸೆಂಟ್ ಆಗಿ ಒಂದು ಇಜ್ರಾನ್ ಗಂಡ ಬಂದು ಇಜ್ರಾನ್ ಒಂದು ಕೊಲೆ ಮಾಡಿಬಿಟ್ಟು ಅದು ಸೂಸೈಡ್ ಅಂತ ಪೊಲೀಸ್ ಸ್ಟೇಷನ್ ನಲ್ಲಿ ಕೊಟ್ಟಿದ್ದಾರೆ. ಅದನ್ನು ನಾವು ಅವ್ರನ್ನ ಅರೆಸ್ಟ್ ಮಾಡಬೇಕು ಅಂತಕ್ಕೋಸ್ಕರ ನಾವು ಇವಾಗ ರಾಲಿ ಮಾಡ್ತಾ ಇದೀವಿ. ಅದಕ್ಕೆ ಹೋಗ್ತಾ ಇದೀವಿ. ನಮಗೆಲ್ಲ
ಚಾಂದಿನಿಗೆ ನ್ಯಾಯ ಬೇಕು. ಸತ್ಯನಾರಾಯಣ. ನಾವೇ ಒಂದು ಸೇರ್ಕೊಂಡಿರುವಂತ ಒಂದು ಗುಂಪು. ಇವಾಗ ಈ ಫೋಕಸ್ ಬಂದು ರ್ಯಾಲಿದು ನಮ್ ಜಾಸ್ತಿ ಬೇಡ, ಮತ್ತೆ ನಮ್ಮಲ್ಲೇ ನಮ್ಗೆ ಹಕ್ಕು ಕೊಡಿ.
This was the first time that was very spontaneously this articulation of Section 377, which penalized homosexuality in the country, to go. I didn't even realize this when I was looking at the footage, and I realized that this person has already said this in 2002. And Kajal, who speaks there, she is a trans woman who unfortunately died out of complications of HIV/AIDS 2 years later. So I started then filming all these, one protest after the other, and this was also the time when the litigation was filed, and there was a long battle. Then in 2009, many groups came together for recriminalizing homosexuality, and in 2009 we had this lovely landmark judgment which gave dignity and rights to people, all minorities, not only sexual minorities. But it was very quickly challenged by all the right-wing groups in the country. For the first time, we had the Christian, Muslim and Hindu fundamentalists all together filing a petition against this judgment, and the Supreme Court immediately heard it within a year. And the questions that were asked in the Supreme Court were really ghastly. The judges were only interested in sexual act and not in the person, which was the Delhi High Court judgment was all about the personhood. So that's when my lawyer friends were all part of this. They would send transcriptions of every day what happened in the court. And then we were not allowed to film inside the court. So I realized that we have to record these memories. And that was the first time I kind of consciously started documenting what actually happened within the court. And we had huge amount of petitioners. There were parents, there were teachers, there were mental health professionals who have all signed petitions and said that this 377 has to go. So I started filming with all of them. There are 27 of them. And then we got this very ghastly Supreme Court judgment which recriminalized homosexuality in 2013. And it became a huge global shame for India. And by then, people had already started filming, other people were filming, and the judges said that, you know, this is a very minuscule minority group in this country, and why should we even bother about their rights? And that was really bad. And that's when, for a whole year, a whole lot of us started documenting, who are we? Where are we? And we are here. And I personally have all this footage. How can this judge say that we are a minuscule minority? So we said we have to now start becoming visible, and we have to start putting out these information. So there was this video that was made by many people who filmed. We made a 2-minute video at the end to mark the first anniversary of that Supreme Court judgment. So this is an online repository called Orinam. They started tracking the whole the legal battle, and there's also a very nice website both in English and Tamil, which is like a support group website. What happened? Oh, sorry. This is the video.
I just feel so exhausted right now thinking that we've been set back by 100 years. What ages are we living in? What is this reflective of us as a culture? What does it say about us as a people? You know, it's bizarre that we got the judgment that we did.
We are standing on a black day for the first time in Indian judicial history. A Supreme Court has taken back rights given to citizens.
This judgment is a fundamental and deep betrayal of the constitutional promise that the dignity of all citizens will be recognized and equal protection is a non-negotiable element of the world's largest democracy. In its betrayal of constitutional faith, the court has shredded the very principles it has sworn itself to uphold.
The court does not confer rights, the court merely confirms them. This court cannot give us our rights. This court cannot take them away.
I've taken the blessings from my mom today and she sent me here to protest and to, you know, fight for my fundamental rights.
अभी तो सुधा से बोल देना चाहते हैं कि अब चुप नहीं बैठेंगे और हम लड़ाई जारी रखेंगे.
When we were 15, 20, 25, 30, 50, 60 years old, we fought the hardest battle of our life to accept who we were inside our own heart. If we survived our own demons, we will survive this institution. एक जजमेंट में ऐसी ताकत है कि ये हमें कहे वी डू नॉट हैव द राइट्स टू डिग्निटी दैट वी डू नॉट इन दिस कंट्री हैव अ पब्लिक स्ट्रेट गे ट्रांसजेंडर लेस्बियन बाइसेक्सुअल हेटेरो दैट ऑल स्टैंड टुगेदर फॉर डेमोक्रेसी नॉट फॉर गे राइट्स बट फॉर डेमोक्रेसी. हम क्या चाहते
आजादी
लेके रहेंगे
आजादी
अरे छीन के रहेंगे
आजादी
तेरे हाथ से लेंगे
आजादी
हमारे हाथ में रहेगी
आजादी
सड़कों पे भी
आजादी
दिन में भी
आजादी
और रात में भी
आजादी
हर लोग के लिए
आजादी
तेरी भी
आजादी
और मेरी भी
आजादी
हर आइडेंटिटी के लिए
आजादी
जुड़ जुड़ के लेंगे
आजादी
जुड़ जुड़ के लेंगे
आजादी
So the last bit that you saw was actually the kind of violence that happened within that 1 year after recriminalizing. So that's when we realized that we have to document, there has to be a contemporary documentation of what's happening and also look at what has happened in the past. So the conversation around archiving started around that time. You must have heard this, just a couple of months ago we had this new judgment which is now kind of repealed 377. That is a different story. That was a different legal battle that happened. And you know, it's also interesting story where you know how political situation actually helps you get justice at one level. But what has happened is that it's a judgment from the court. So even now there are many many cases of violence, especially from families and. Each and every case has to go to the court in order to get it resolved. Like lesbian women, adult women are being put under house arrest. They lose jobs, they run away, and then we have to keep intervening. So it's case by case, and we can't go to the legislature, and right now we can't even think of it because we have this very, very right-wing government which has gone after the lawyer who actually, the senior counsel who actually fought this case. They've put a false case on him and there's an FIR out for him. So we don't know what's going to happen. So right now in the archive, this is the kind of material that I have. So I have all this video footage, I have this extensive documentation of the legal process, and I'm also doing these long format interviews to understand about what does justice mean to us in India and how do we access it. And then I have this other collection, the Sangama, which is that organization I earlier mentioned, was actually funded for 14 years by HIWAS. And they have documented every day, 5 language newspapers, anything and everything to do with sexuality and health. Now that funding is folded, the organization is folded, all those boxes were just lying out in the veranda, which I have retrieved and I've brought it. So it's with us. And then we have private people's collections. So we have all these collections now, and it's different media. And then we have all these other people who are willing to give us their material, and we have told them, don't give it to us right now, hold it on, because we don't have space. So these are some of the old stuff. So this is the first ever booklet that was published called Less Than Gay. By this very prolific young lawyer who died of cancer very quickly. He wrote how this Section 377 should be fought in the court. and it's called the Pink Booklet. And then this is a bunch of people got together in 1995 and they said, this is our rights, Declaration of Freedom. And all those people have signed. And then this is one of the trans women whom you saw in the video talking. She's also a poet, writer, actor. So this is her poem that she wrote in Tamil. It's a draft of a poem that she's written. And this is from the diaspora out of England. And this is the first conference that was ever organized by a bunch of law students in the late 90s in Bangalore, which actually preempted this entire sexuality movement in Bangalore. So this is a student writing to the VC saying, you should allow us to hold this conference. And this was a postcard campaign that we did to Chief Justice of India when the 2013 judgment came out. And this is one of the protest pictures from the first Pride in Bangalore. And this is like a personal postcard somebody's written. These are just some examples of the material that I have. Now we have this huge challenge. How do we get all this material together? Because India is very complex. There is no one single identity. There are multiple identities that people have. So our queer archive is a very heterogeneous archive. So we have to now think of how do we cross-refer, catalog between five languages, but between media, multimedia, the same person appears all over. And we also have the biggest challenge of people changing their gender identities. And they say, now, we don't want to look at our past. Now, what do I do with those kind of material? Do we destroy it? Do we keep it? Do we put it out later? How do we go about it? And then people have, somebody said in an earlier panel, people who are dead, we don't have to worry about. But we do have to worry about. I mean, the families are still there. And how do we deal with them? That's a big question, especially when it comes to trans people, because they run away from home, they don't have any connection with families, families not helping them, but the family is ever present. They're always there and they come. And then how do we deal with that, those situations? And it's both physical and digital, so we have to figure out our policies and privacy issues, how do we get material, all of this. And we have no formal funding. Right now we are only, I work out of my studio space, so rent is paid by my family. I'm not doing any other work, I only do this all the time. And I have volunteers, and we have friends who have given us some money so we can work on this. And we are also very clear that we don't want any institutional funding right now, because we have the copyrights right now for all this material, and we don't want to give it to anybody. And we don't have university spaces, and also university space will not be open to a lot of the LGBT people. So our idea of creating this physical archive is also that it becomes a space, a community space, where people can come and hang out and do things. So this is where we are, and I think I've gone over the time. But there's a little trailer about the archive, which I won't show it to you now. But you can all look at the website. Sorry. This is the website. You can...
Okay. You can, and on the Vimeo also, Yayashree's videos. Thank you, Yayashree. I think we have learned much now, at least this saying that democracy in India is a top dressing on a soil that is essentially undemocratic. I think it's true for other countries in the world, and it's worth thinking about this situation. And thank you for outlining this recriminalization act and fight for repealing it and the success of this fight. So, okay, you are only three, so I am not so strict. Are there any questions? Yes.
image, I would like to say that there is a lot of difference between India and Sweden in terms of acceptance of homosexuality, LGBT issues. My concern is about not about the documentary of the movies that has related to LGBT people, but about mainstream films. Mainstream films that has, in which the LGBT character, in which in the LGBT character plays an important role in the mainstream movies. Because if we want to learn about history about a country, how do they cope with the information about LGBT, we have to, I think, in my opinion, we have to take a look at what the heterosexual think about homosexuality. And if we have to think about how do they think about LGBT people, we have to, back to the mainstream film, telenovela, sinetron, and that kind of television, because I'm working for the LGBT archive and library, and this is always a problem. It has been always a problem to draw a line between keeping, maintaining, cataloging movies in which the LGBT role plays an important role in the movies, or a documentary or movies that has only related to the LGBT LGBT issues. So my question is, how far do you keep this information, these movies, this video in your collection, and how do you keep it, this collection? Yes.
We have a lot of, as you know, India is full of fiction films, what is now being called Bollywood.
Yes.
But we have many local regional language cinema, very robust cinema. So this person's poetry that I showed you, she was actually cast as an actor to play the trans roles in fiction films. And in the last 15 years, having gay or LGBT characters is a big selling point in fiction films. So over the years, it has improved. Initially, there were caricatures. There's been, they'll come as a side character or something. But last 2 years, we've had few films which are depicting LGBT characters as main roles and more positive characters. We've also had mainstream film producers and directors who are from the LGBT community, but they'll never say that they are LGBT because they are very privileged. They can live in a secluded life. They don't have to come out. But they have started making these films so that there's some hope there. We have a huge collection of film. The way this whole group started was by film screening. I used to go and screen a film every Thursday, and people would come, and that's how we started having this conversation about LGBT people in India and closet, outside of closet, and there are not many movies in India at that time. And then they said, what about our stories? And that's how I started making the film with them. I am not from the community. I am a heterosexual person, but I have been very, very closely linked, and a whole lot of us have been linked. So when you talk about intersectionality, the LGBT movement in India has been very, very intersectional. And also because there is so much inequality in the country, there's so much of divisions in terms of caste, class, language, gender, that we have to come together. And that is what is under threat today, and we are trying to revive that. So 20 years ago when I started, it was a very easy open space for me to actually be part of that life, and I'm very privileged to have seen it a very, very close context, or like how they live their lives. So we always use the term we, but we is a lot of people who are of different orientation. But at the same time, there's huge amount of prejudices that exist. So cinema is a bridging point, and we also have a lot of fiction in local languages, so that also we collect. So we are collecting both film, documentaries, fiction, writings, songs. There are also beautiful songs that people
sing. Collecting not only documentary but also
everything.
All kind of genre.
It's a multimedia thing, and that's why it becomes a challenge. Even though I came as a filmmaker into this whole thing, but right now this panel is actually, it's a bit confusing because it says moving images, but mine is beyond moving images. And I wanted to take this opportunity to show you all what all we have.
So, great. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the answer.
Okay. Ola, please. Okay, it's okay. It's all the same.
Yeah, first of all, amazing work they're doing. I completely stand with you because I think that we often forget to record all the protests and everything that we're doing. And it's so, so important what you're doing. I wanted to ask you, so you said that you have a lot of hard copy materials. It's really impressive how much you've gathered. It's amazing. I wanted to ask you, how did you make the selection of what will you make online? And what kind of repositories do you have in mind? Like, did you have, for example, a cooperation with the Internet Archive or buying specific clouds? Or, like, what are your thoughts on this? Because you have really a lot of material. And parallel to that, do you want to keep the physical archive as well? Yeah.
No, physical archive is the main thing. Okay, and for two reasons. One is that we clearly can't afford this whole digital world. We tried, you know, somebody was writing open source code, and it's always sounding very, very beautiful. You know, it'll be decentralized, people can keep their material wherever they are, and all of that. But it requires a lot of specialist skills. So we cannot have volunteers with IT skills all the time, even though I live in the IT world of India. So we said it has to be a physical world, especially when it comes to documentary, because I was also earlier part of a documentary or digital archive project called Padma, but it didn't go anywhere after a point. So the physical space is also because we want young people to come, where they can feel safe. And with film is a very glamorous thing. People get very attracted. So we want to create these booths where people can come and watch unedited footage, both fiction, non-fiction, and we can have conversation around them. And we also want to do these recording booths where people can come and record their own stories. Because now young people are coming out to their parents, and to some extent parents are now, at least in urban areas, are slightly more open. So we want to also collect parents' stories. So the other day one mother came and said, can I tell you my story? So that's when this idea came. Like, they can just come and they can record audio of what they want, if they don't want to identify themselves. So that's one idea. So we have these many ideas. And in terms of internet, digital thing, I have a colleague now who's volunteering for 6 months. And another colleague was supposed to come, couldn't come because of visa issues. Otherwise, we were both supposed to present. He's been doing a lot of work online, but mostly it's text-based. So we have a website finally, but we don't know all about which software we will use, whether we should, you know, put everything in or not. For us, privacy is a huge, huge concern, and we have to really tackle that, because we still have problems, you know, people get outed and all kinds of things that they go through. So I think we'll go very slow. You will only see us online maybe a couple of years from now, not right away. But we are hoping we'll have the physical space by end of the 2 years. To answer another question, we've got all this material. We have not yet said that we will not keep this or we'll not keep that. That is another challenge that we will have to go through. Institutional collections, it's fine because it's already cataloged in a certain extent. It's the private collection of people's papers that we need to see what we keep and how we keep, and who decides what you will keep or not. And I'm part of a larger group of some 12 people who are advising the two of us who are there every day about how we go about it. So it's a collective process in that sense. Yeah.
I just wanted to say thank you. It's an absolutely fabulous resource that you have, and I think it shows the amazing role that allies can play in terms of supporting the LGBT community in documenting our lives. And it was really powerful to hear people's voices and the voices of pride that you showed there, of people's response to something that was so negative, and you know, that in the face of that you were able to document and show people saying this doesn't affect who we are and it doesn't define who we are. And I think that's incredibly powerful. And you know what you were saying as well about the importance of staying independent and not being controlled and subject to an institution, I think is really important. And I suppose the question I wanted to ask you then was, you showed the short documentary that you did. Do you have plans to maybe make a longer one that, that shows more about that story that you captured? Because clearly you have so much material. And thank you, really fabulous work.
I made these two films back to back 15 years ago. One was on many people in the desires on the LGBT movement. The other one was to access to medicine and HIV/AIDS, which is another huge taboo. No one talks about HIV, and we have lost a lot of people from my own footage here to HIV. And the lawyer that I was mentioning, who has been persecuted now, is the same lawyer for both the cases, and he has done many other human rights cases. And 5 years ago, I thought I would make a film about this whole notion of justice, following this lawyer and his group who has been tackling all these cases in India. But you know, it's when you make a film, you lose out a lot of things because you choose and you edit and all of that. So I kept dilly-dallying. I didn't really edit the film. And this archiving has given me an opportunity to actually put out stuff now. So I have unedited stuff which I can put it out. And this whole 377 legal story is becoming more and more important today. So we are planning to do a web story around it. So you will be able to see unedited, longer story forms and at the same time, small story forms. That's the thing. But I'm not going to make another big film, at least for a few years. I think I'm done with making films. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and... Please, Zrinka, I introduce you, Zrinka Kolarić from Croatia, and the presentation was made by together with Anna Opalić, who couldn't be here. And this is a pilot project, and Zrinka is a professional archivist, worked for the Unveiling Personal Memories on War and Detention in Croatia for 3 years. And both of them take part in an activist band, a queer band in Croatia. So, please.
Thank you, Judith. Just a short comment. I'm not a professional archivist. I studied history and I volunteered for that project, which I will mention. But it's important. I'm not an archivist. So, hi, everybody. My name is Rinka, and I will talk about our pilot project, recording personal stories of lesbian existence in Croatia. I'm a bit shaken by Jairus's video, so I have a feeling like I'm emotionally somewhere else and I have to compose myself and come back to my own project. Okay, so first of all, basic stuff about the project. The name L'Existencia, it's a working title, and it comes from the core goal of our project, which is to record personal stories of lesbian existence. So when we started thinking about the project, we talk about lesbian existence, and in Croatian it says lesbiska existencia, so we made it short, like l'existence, and when you say it in French, like l'existence, then it sounded kind of cool and posh and something nice. It's kind of in contrary with the content we filmed, because lesbian existence, especially in Croatia, is not something that is usually cool and posh and nice. What our main question was, I mean, the question that led our interviews is how one's sexual orientation and gender identity or identities influence major aspects of one's life. And I will tackle this question later in details. So for short overview, we made video interviews in form of a life story. We made a focus on themes like early childhood, family, identity, religion, education, education and so forth. And this is really important. This is a grassroots activist project. We don't have any kind of fundings. We don't have any institution to back us up. We are only two volunteers, Anna, who was supposed to be here with me today, and myself. Okay, so I have to present Anna because she is the artistic half of our little team. I was just a dull historian. And why I want to say this is because I just want to illustrate how we are not just two random individual people who decided to do oral history project. We do have some kind of experience. Anna is a professional photographer and cinematographer, and she's been exhibiting for last 30 years or more. And in 2003, she represented Croatia in Venice Biennale. She also has experience in making documentary movies. These are the two movies that are the biggest ones. And the second one, once again, from 2014, is the first documentary in Croatia that tackles a theme of transgender person in Croatia. She made a movie, she filmed five of her friends during the 5 years, five lesbians, and one of them during the filming of the movie entered transition. You will see him in a short trailer I will show you later. She's also an activist. She collaborates with different NGO projects, and I mean people from Croatia or region who are in this LGBTQ community knows her because she's really doing a great job and she's fabulous, and I'm really sorry she's not here with us today. I don't have a page about my CV because the only remotely cool about my CV comparing to Anna's is that I'm a drummer in her band. Okay, kind of comic relief moment, but actually if I had more time, I would like to tell you about this band because the story about this band and this project and Anna and other people here are really interconnected, but I don't have time. But the story of this band in the context of lesbian visibility in Croatia is really beautiful and really important, but I have to skip this for now. Okay, so a little bit more about our background. So Anna and I met 8 years ago while we were working on this project, which was a huge oral history project named Croatian Memories, unveiling the personal memories on war and detention. So it was a project that lasted 3 or 4 years, and it was funded by, some Dutch university. But it was a really serious, complex project, and in the end they gathered over 400 oral history interviews. Focus was on war victims and people who in any way had any kind of tragic experience during the war, which I guess most of you know that Croatia in the early 90s, after the fallout of Yugoslavia, was in a five-year war. So I entered the project as a student, as a volunteer, and I worked as an interviewer. I led over, 100 interviews. So in those 3 years, as we work together, we get to know each other. And when you film war victims and people who experience extreme trauma, there is also, of course, the secondary trauma. And the way we dealt with secondary trauma was that we made terrible black humor jokes and stuff like that, but we talked a lot. For example, we would go for 2 or 3 days for some remote part of Croatia and feel for maybe 10 interviews, and then we would go back home completely exhausted and traumatized, and then we talk about everything that we heard there. And I remember one of those long drives home when it was long silence, nobody knew what to say, and Anna just said in one moment, somebody should film lesbians like this. Why is nobody filming us? We have terrible story too. I mean, nobody talks about that. And we all agreed, like, that's a great idea, but it stayed on that. So back to skip forward to 2018. Well, we tried to move on the project early in 2013 and 14, but at that moment I still hadn't graduated. I worked two jobs, Anna had her projects. We tried to write some proposals, ask for money, but it didn't work. So we put it away for a while. And what happened in the meantime? I graduated. and for my final thesis, I worked on the theme of interpersonal relationship in the context of the oral history interview, because that is something that was really close to me, and I found it really, really inspiring. And the project that we worked on ended, so Anna and I both had experience, and we learned a lot about it, and so we set, like, during the beginning of the last year, we had conversation. It's kind of both of us at the same time thought about it, why shouldn't we try again? But this time we decided that we should change approach, and we said, okay, we'll just start filming no matter what. We don't have money, it doesn't matter what are the pros. Anna is a professional cinematographer, she has knowledge, she has equipment. I graduated, we had this experience from before, so we made a plan to record several interviews with the women that we knew who were out, maybe some activists, and who wouldn't mind the camera, because we really wanted to make video interviews. And the idea was to create a short video or something like that that we could use when we start to write project again, and to when we start to write proposals. It's easier, maybe people will see you in more serious light when you can show them something that's some kind of results, so they can see what they are giving money to. So this was our idea. We will film only few interviews, because what we were afraid is that we won't be able to find people who will be willing to stand in front of the camera and tell their personal emotional stories. And what happened was, unexpectedly, that we got really, really positive feedback, and whoever we asked, and we made a list of like 40 women that we knew, and we started going through the list, and whoever we asked said yes. And that was those were our friends, not people who were recommended to us. So we started to film the interviews, and the main obstacle wasn't their reluctance to film, but our free time, because I have a daily job, 9 to 5. Anna is a freelance photographer and cinematographer. She works from Monday to Sunday, and of course our interviewees also have their lives, so to arrange like slot of 3 or 4 hours, because when we come, we need to set up the equipment, talk a little, prepare them, and then we film for 2 or 3 hours, and afterwards you still have to have some time. It's usually took us for 3 weeks to just arrange one interview. So that's why it took us 8 months to film these 9 interviews. A bit about our methodology. We are not we are just two enthusiasts, but as I study history and sociology, and as I worked on this project before, it was important for me to, even in this pilot phase, to try to make this as right as possible. I'm aware of all the problems we have and we had, but for this phase, we tried to do our best to do it right. So it was, as I said, video interviews in a form of life story. We had a semi-structured questionnaire with open-ended questions, and questions were grouped under the main themes, which are loosely chronological organized. So idea was to make a live story, and of course you want to follow some chronological order, so we have first group of questions about early childhood, for example, what kind of toys did you have when you were little, how did you dress, how your hair was, did you like it, did you not like it, how were your parents about it, and stuff like that. But every person is different in the way they form their narrative. So some people perfectly follow this chronological line, and some people are really hectic and jump around, and you have to follow their narrative but still come back to your questionnaire. So this is one of the topics that in the future I would really like to work on with somebody who will mentor me. We filmed at homes of our interviewees, and one of our rules is that nobody is present, especially partners or family members, because people tend to talk really differently about their relationship and emotions when they're alone and when there's their partner there with them. And all the interviews were filmed in Zagreb with women whose current residence is Zagreb, because, as I said, we are volunteers and we're doing it in our free time, and we don't have means, time or money to go outside of Zagreb. We have only one interviewee who isn't from Zagreb. It's Tijana, you will see her in the trailer. She is from Belgrade, but she married a girl from Zagreb and now she's living here, so most of her life story is related to Serbia, to Belgrade and Novi Sad. Okay, I exceeded my time, so I have only 3 minutes and the trailer is 4 minutes long, so I'll start with the trailer. I should have watched the time better.
Nisam imala razloga misliti da se trebam skrivati, nisam imala ništa loše da se događa. Vidjela sam hrpetine parova kako se ljube i grle i koješta po tramvajskim stanicama dok čekaju zadnji prijevoz za doma. Da, radila sam to i ja. Samo mene je neko dočekao na izlasku iz tog tramvaja da me pretuče u ulici i nastavi dalje svojim putem.
Ona je počela pričati o Bibliji i ona se uključila u tu vjersku zajednicu i dosta je zabrijala na to, recimo. I te rasprave nisu nigdje vodile i to je bilo užasno frustrirajuće zapravo. Ja sam jedino mogla pričati, ja se tako osjećam, ja sam se takva rodila, ja vjerujem da sam se takva rodila. I onda je bio argument čak u jednom trenutku, dobro, ako si ti takva rodila, to znači da je vrag ušao u tebe, odnosno u tvoju majku i kroz nju u tebe. I tu se kao, da, doslovno, znači što je u meni ono izazivalo bijes.
Na sudu je bilo svega, na sudu je bilo vrlo neprimjereni stvari u kojem je mene sutkinja izvela kad sam svjedočila i pitala mi jeste vi lezbika. A moja odvjetnica tada je, znajući da će to sigurno izaći, ona meni sam rekao, slušaj, kao kad dođeš tamo ti ćeš onda lagati ili tako. Ja velim, pa joj smijem, ona kaže, moraš lagati.
I mama je rekla svom bratu, mom ujaku, i on je meni zabranio da vodim djevojčice bilo gdje, rekao je da ne želi da ja imam ikakav utjecaj na njih i da jedino mogu da ih vidim dok je on u kući, u njihovoj kući. To bio šok, onako, za sve. To je potpuno ono promijenilo je čitavu familiju, da tako kažem. Za mene isto bio totalni šok.
I stalno imaš taj neki osjećaj da si kriv, da nisi dovoljno dobar, da si drugačiji, da si ružniji, da si, ne znam...
Ti si mama lezbejka koja je upropastila tati život i nama sad i ti si pali kuća. Dakle, to je ono što smo rekli.
Bio nekakav koncert, imali smo nekakvu dvoranu, nazovimo to tako, gdje su najčešće bili koncerti po Osijeku. A WC je bio u podrumu. Naravno, nakon nekog vremena na koncertu trebaš ići do WC-a. Nisam izašla više iz njega. Sutradan sam malo nadošla sebi. Zadnje se sjećam tri frajera koji su mi odlučili opisati da je jedna prljava lezbeča, nema tu šta raditi.
Istupili su te?
Da, istupilarili su mi i ostavili tamo.
ljudi koji su prolazili, dolazili i niko
dolazili. Ja ih se ne sjećam, ja sam došla sebi ujutro.
Znači, to je bilo nebrojeno puta da smo mi išli u urgentni centar. Znači, taj tip povreda da je morao da se ode u urgentni centar. Sad govorimo o gej muškarcima, mislim, koji su bili silovani zato što su gejevi, ono, na ulici. Devojke koje su bile zavezivane za radijator od strane roditelja, pretučene, držane bukvalno u kućnom pritvoru. Lezbijke koje su imale decu, kojima su muževi otimali decu, bivši muževi, ono, prisilno ih autali svima u gradu, na poslu i slično. Mislim, ono, užasne priče.
Razvod je još bio tu i on je jednom prilikom u Zagrebu napao fizički, isto tako. Kad smo išle, na Kaptol centru smo bile u šopingu, pa smo išle na Jarum na Roštilj sa curama, uglavnom došao iza leđa, tresno mene, nju u glavu nabio onaj parkirni aparat, sve stvari razbacao, ja pala dole, i onda sam, je bila prva situacija u kojem sam ja nastrnula na njega, nakon što me napukla. Dakle, inače sam bila onak zaleđena, nisam uzvraćala, jer je prvi put da sam ja, to je bilo ono, podne, subota, u podne, ovoliko ljudi na Kaptol centru dole na parkingu.
So, as I don't have much time, I will just put up the end of, sorry, the wrong presentation. I will put up the last slide while I take questions, if there are any.
I have a question.
Okay.
Yes, I call. Yep. Sorry.
So, long-term
Anna and Yayashri to come to the okay. stage. And if anybody is interested in long-term goals. Okay.
So previously you mentioned that you was affected by vicarious trauma during your first project. Did you develop now any strategies to self-care?
This might sound weird, but working on this project had opposite effect on us. It was empowering. I show you, I had the two trailers, but I talked too much, so I didn't have time to show you the other one. It's a maybe more positive one. This is really heavy stuff. But all those interviews show how all those women are strong, you know. No matter what they've been through, especially Dubravka, who was really had a hard time with her ex-husband, but she saved herself and her two children, and she's one of the most beautiful women I know today. So one of the effects on me of working on this project for last year is that I finally came out to my father. So unlike that war-themed project, which was really extremely difficult for me, and I had several burnouts and really problems dealing with the things I've heard. But those stories evolved around people who were murdered, people who were tortured, women whose children die on their arms. So it's really, really extreme. And here, it's kind of balanced, you know. You have people who've been through traumatic experience, but they find strength in themselves to build their life and fought back, you know. So for me, this was empowering experience.
And last short question. Will you collect stories of people who identify themselves as a woman?
Yes, in the second trailer, I didn't have time to show, we have interview with Noah. He's a transgender man I mentioned from the Anna's documentary. Our goal is to film all women who identified as lesbian or bisexual women, or in identified like that in certain period of life. For example, Noah is now he identifies as transgender man, but for the first, I think, 25 years of his life, I mean, for his adult life, he identified as a lesbian. So this is, in this working phase, this is our approach.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for showing us that. I think it was, like you said, like obviously difficult to watch, but I can see how you could be empowered by it. Just thinking back to earlier on when you said that you obviously you and Anna are working as a grassroots group, you don't have any institutional funding. Is there any way that you are, well, are you, first of all, are you looking for funding from other parties, non-institutional parties? And if so, is there any way that we could support your work?
Yes, of course. The last the part was that our current phase is that we have this video material that we will use as a part of our project proposal that we are working on, because our goal is to find some kind of funding to be able to film across Croatia, because we would really like to go to rural areas. I mean, this is Zagreb, and people, it's the capital of Croatia, and it's easy, I mean, easier to be out in Zagreb than in some small town in eastern Croatia or other, sorry, my English is kind of bad. So, it's easier to be out in Zagreb, and of course, a lot of these women are our friends, are part of the community, a lot of them are activists, so of course, it's easy to get this kind of story, but what for me would be the great thing to be able to go to remote areas and film women who live in very traditional communities, who might not be out or are out and have really issues with their family and community and stuff like that. So yes, we are looking for some kind of funding to be able to make. Our goal is to create a digital archive or of oral histories with lesbians and bisexual women. So we would like to, I don't know, maybe create a project that would last 1 or 2 or 3 years and to film at least 50 interviews or more if it's possible. And then on the long term, I already met girls from Bosnia who made a similar project, and we both have this ambition to spread our project and connect with similar organizations in the region, because when you interview women who are 40 years or older, they lived in Yugoslavia in their formative years. So in a way, it makes sense to make this project regional, because they were all living in the same country 30 years ago. So long term, we would like to go regional with this project. So if you know where to ask for funds, please let me know.
Yes, I have the question that are there any further plans with this 9 interview, for example, to show it to a wider public? What about publishing them?
We haven't thought about it, because coming to this conference was kind of... we didn't plan it. We accidentally found about it, and I planned to come here just as an observer, but Anna said, no, we have to come and show our project. So we made this trailer specifically for this conference, because the last interview was filmed, I think, 3 weeks ago or something like that. So we didn't have time to think about what to do next or what to do further. We, at the moment, we only think about forming a small team, because we are already talking with several people, to start to work on a proposal.
Yeah, but what about the characters? They didn't mind the camera and the interview. But what about further publishing? Did you mention them, this
yes,
possibility?
Yes, we communicate with them idea of an archive, because if Anna were here, she would better explain this. She has these ideas of creating not just documentary from it or educational videos, but also some kind of artistic interventions with this video material. I don't want to talk about it because it's not my area. I don't want to say anything wrong. But all of them are okay with this, that this material is used this way. But since this was all filmed with our friends exclusively for the pilot project phase, we made oral agreement with them. So they are our friends, and they said, okay, you can film us. And it's on, it was based on trust, but when we continue with this project and start filming people we don't know, of course we will have
permission.
Because that we know that this how this has to be done. But since we don't have any kind of project, we are not institution. We're just two volunteers. When we filmed, for example, Tiana, she said, I don't need to sign a contract with you. You are my friend. We know each other. I trust you. So this is all, at this moment, we're based on trust. Yeah. So.
There is a question.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Adila. I only wanted to make a quick question. As I now learned that the video the material that you brought to the conference was especially made for that conference and won't be accessible otherwise, I just wanted to ask if there would be a possibility to also watch the other video maybe after that panel or in the frame of the panel.
Yeah, I have both trailers on my mobile phone. But I mean, we don't have time probably here, but maybe if somebody of you have a computer, we can watch it on computer.
All right, thank you.
Here in the second row, there is a question.
What?
Okay.
Do you want to go first?
But.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you very, very much, all three of you. It was really very rich material and fantastic work you're all doing. I think it's very good that you're there as a filmmaker and Anna as a filmmaker because, continuing with your question, I think it's great to have archival material, but the other side of that is how to use it within the public, and how to use it as an educational or consciousness-raising material. So I think, that whatever Anna might do with these interviews, how she can put it together in a documentary fashion, it would be really good to have shorter documentaries to go into communities and to just raise this as a question, and to get people to talk about how they feel, about these women and their experiences, or about their own experiences. I think that's at least as important as having it in archives. That's maybe what I would call archival activism.
Well, that is the thing, because I didn't have time. I would talk about this on my last slideshow, but I exceeded my time, so I didn't have time to show you. But one of the creation or archive isn't the only goal. It is one of three goals. The second one is using these materials to not just making documentaries or educational videos, which might be used in schools, university, inside a community, on workshops, or any kind of ways of to communicate with the community, but also to give it to make it available to other artists who have idea how to interpret those materials and make their own interventions. But to be able to do that, there is really, really important part that when the project starts with people who are not our friends, that we have really strict consents. That people who consent to, because somebody will give us interview just for archives and said, okay, I don't want anybody to intervene in my, because when you intervene in somebody's narrative, you're taking elements out of the context, and some people are not okay with it. Some people will say, okay, I told you my story and I just want it to be preserved as it is from the beginning to the end. So there is a lot of questions, ethical questions, that we need to tackle with this project proposal and dealing with all the details that have to be done before it, we make it bigger.
There is a question.
This guy was first.
Thank you for the presentations. Actually, I loved all three presentations. My name is Sasha. I also come from Croatia, from Iskorak, and from INC, another cultural innovation center. I also worked for many years in the institutions for the Croatian Conservation Institute, and the issue of preserving cultural heritage was really central to us in a material form. And I, as a queer person, also very much appreciate the contents of your productions and of your archives. But my question to all three speakers is actually, are there any archival or production standards that you are following so that you make your archives and productions accessible in the future? Because we believe that your collections now are maybe on the margins, but within 50 years, they will become mainstream and they will actually enter the archives. We hope so. So are there any standards that you're following and protecting your collections to be able to actually leave them to the future generations for research and for production? Thank you.
See, Indians don't preserve anything. We don't even have many museums. We come to Europe to see the museums. Most of our stuff is in England. But now, having said the last few years, there's been a lot of interest in archiving. So Bangalore is actually the city of archives, because there are 5 archives are being set up right now. And 4 are institutional archives. 1 is an art archive, 3 are science archives, and we are the only independent archive. And the funniest thing is, we are the only one with material, whereas others, are they all have space, money, staff, but they don't have material. They're looking for material. So we collaborate. We are in conversation with them. So it's a big responsibility, and we are trying to figure out what would be our methodology to how do we keep our archives. And I've been sitting in all the digital panels the last 2 days because I'm trying to understand this whole area. So it's a huge responsibility. We are trying to figure out our own language. We don't have archivists anymore, trained archivists in our country. The government archives are in Delhi is really in a pathetic state. But right now they have decided that they are going to train students because it's an employment opportunity for them. So we are trying to figure out our own methods, and we hope we will come up with something that can be, you know, useful, it will work, and eventually it will become part of the larger mainstream thing. But we have another task where we have to actually train our people to make them open to this idea that we need to preserve. So that's a bigger challenge than, you know, putting it together. So yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can just short say that we follow a European standard of categories in the database, but it's still just an Excel document. So because of the shortly kind of period, I didn't want to start collecting physical material yet, because I think we need much more resources or a collaborator that we want to go with that can deal with, you know, as film and video and colder rooms and all this kind of stuff. So I think the thing we do is easy to export. So we have followed all the, and because we work with archivists and people who can do that also. But we try to querying the database because we don't like all the categories, how you can follow one person, you know, from having one name and a collective or another identity and that kind of stuff. So that we try to research a lot. So we have one archive in Germany and one in Canada that we work with on how to handle that kind of things. So, yeah.
Thanks. When I mentioned that we first tried to put the project in motion in 2014, I think, at that time we started really like, firstly, we first contacted Centar za ženske studije. It's a feminist organization in Zagreb, and they have their space and archives and everything. And we talked with many organizations and many people, and we started the project like firstly on the paper, and then nothing happened. So, but now we decided to like dive head first, you know, just start a film and see where this will lead us. But for me, as a historian, I mean, I'm not a historian, I'm somebody who graduated history, but I'm back in the field now. To do things properly is very important. So I've contacted Franco Dotta, for example, because I would really love to involve him in the project and to be some kind of mentor and advisor in the field of methodological approach and the way interviews are handled, because I would like the source. I'm talking from the position of a dull historian now. Anna would talk about art, so I'm sorry, don't think that all I'm talking about is all the project will be. I'm talking about this historical part, which is things that interest me the most. And of course, we will also try to include somebody who has experience is in handling archives. So at the moment, I don't have any answers because we are at the moment in the process of trying to find people who will be part of the team and trying to write the proposal. What I've shown you is just like enthusiastic few months of work to have something started.
Okay, thanks everybody for the questions and remarks. I think it was a useful afternoon. I'm